Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Money Crimes is a podcast all about the dark side of finance and sometimes murder. Find Money Crimes on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today. The day before Thanksgiving, the 27th of November, a chilly yet sunny Wednesday afternoon. How you doing, Andy?
I am very good, except for the slight headache.
From the helmet that you brought in today.
Yep.
If you missed it on the crossover, if you're not watching on Twitch, Andy Hart showed up today, turning back the clock, if you will, with his football helmet from high school, which still fits you. Or does it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A little tight, a little snug?
Yeah, it is. But I think that's just, you know, hard plastic from years of...
I mean, it could be that, yeah. Not just the helmet, though. We have the jersey. We have the Letterman jacket.
Yep.
And, or is that it? Was there one
jersey,
more?
Jersey, Letterman jacket.
And the helmet, okay.
And helmet.
No pads or anything? No, you're not wearing a cup?
I do not have a jock on or a cup or okay. anything like that. But I will, if you stick around. We're going to talk to Danny Ventura from
yes.
the Boston Herald, sort of the godfather of high school sports coverage about Thanksgiving Day football. I plan on wearing it all for that interview.
Okay.
So stick around, especially on Twitch, and you'll get to see me show you off my high school attire.
Now, you didn't wear anything for Halloween.
No.
And yet, you're dressing up today.
Well, should I have worn this for Halloween?
I mean, sure.
You could have.
It would have been something, yeah.
Thank you, Arkan.
You didn't wear anything for Halloween either.
Right, but I'm not dressing up today, so I'm being consistent at least.
This is all I have.
Dressing up on random days.
It's not a random day. It's a big day for high school football. You ever read Jerry Callahan's tribute to high school football?
Tomorrow's the big
day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're not on tomorrow, so.
That's true, we're not. And yes, I have read that. It's been a while since I've read that thing, but yeah, I remember Jerry writing that.
Did you play?
I played football on the freshman team,
yep.
and that was it. And then I just was basketball after that.
You didn't like it, or
I was fast, but I wasn't very big. Like I was a pretty skinny kid, so I kind of got tossed around, and I wasn't into it. And I don't even think I would have made the team anyway. So I said forget it, and focus full time on basketball. Which you know now I'm a big basketball star, as you can see. But yeah, I was doing that instead, and baseball too. I was baseball and basketball, but I did play freshman football.
Okay,
and I was like the backup gunner, and I made one tackle.
Well, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it a good one? Did you light somebody up, like
no.
a punt returner?
Oh, no, fair catch. I kind of dove and grabbed him by, got his ankles as he was going by.
The old Christian Gonzalez tackle.
Yeah, kind of one of those. And that was the only play I ever made. And I think I lined up on offense like twice as a tight end, just a block.
Okay.
I threw a block or two, and that was basically it. But yeah, I was a basketball player.
What about the behind the glass boys? Either of you...
Never played on Thanksgiving. I never played.
No?
Because I only played on the freshman team.
See, that's why you don't get it.
I know. Well, no, I
Special.
Get it. I liked going to the Turkey Bowl
Special.
Games. It was fun. I just didn't play in them.
History. How about you guys?
Sorry to disappoint. I was a different kind of psycho. I was a hockey player growing up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
Do you have your helmet and jersey? Can we put that in the rotation at some point?
On me at this current moment? No. But down the road. Okay. Yeah, sure. And it's going to feel the exact same that yours did. Too tight because, you know, a couple pounds have been gained since then.
Yeah, my head hurts.
I played Pop Warner football for a couple years for Eastie, but it wasn't really my thing. I was more of a basketball guy, but I did not play in high school, no.
Eastie, you and Wiggy.
Yeah.
Eastie versus Chelsea tonight, so can't wait till we talk to...
They play tonight?
Yes,
I believe so. Is that at Fenway, or where is that?
I'm not 100%
Because I know there's
sure.
a couple games
out.
At Fenway tonight,
That's cool, actually. That's a very, very cool thing that's going on there tonight. Of course, Thanksgiving is tomorrow, so we won't be here, and we have all the things we usually do on a Patriots Friday that we'll be doing today, like our scouting report, our picks. We'll also have our normal Wednesday stuff today, as in Adam Schefter at 3:45. We'll talk to Scal at 4 o'clock, and as you just mentioned, Danny Ventura, the Boston Herald, covers high school sports. He will join us to give us a rundown at 4:45 about all the games going on tonight and tomorrow, who to watch for. I know that there's a lot of media people offspring that are playing in these games here in the next couple of days, so that's exciting, and we're excited to get to that. You just heard that Bruins game. We'll get to the Bruins here in just a second. Before we get to them, I was thinking about the things in Boston sports that I'm thankful for right now. It's really one thing. There's one thing I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for Wick Grosbeck and the Celtics. That's it. I'm thankful for Wick Grosbeck spending his father's money so cavalierly and putting this team together that's just awesome and kicking everybody's ass. And that's really it. I was trying to think of like something to be thankful for with the Patriots. I'm kind of thankful for Drake May.
Yeah.
But I do think that they're ruining him. I think that this is not helping his progression. I think that it's stunting it. So
does AVP.
Right. And AVP had some things to say about the turnovers today, too, which we'll get to.
Oh, so I wasn't a jerk to ask about the turnovers earlier in the week?
No, you were not. And he disagrees with the idea that it's not a problem. So we'll get to that, which I was very surprised to hear. I was surprised to hear Van Pelt he didn't really go at Drake May, but he did sort of contradict him, which was interesting. It was like when Mayo contradicted Robert Kraft in the introductory press conference. He's like, actually, it was kind of the same thing. But we'll get to that in just a minute. But really, I'm thankful for the Celtics. The Patriots stink. The Red Sox are, I think, about to go through the same crap they always go through every winter, where they're interested in a bunch of players like Blake Snell, who just signed with the Dodgers and deferred his whole contract so they can sign whoever else they want to.
Did you laugh out loud when you saw that? Like, when you saw Blake Snell reach his agreement and then it's Dodgers? I laughed.
I saw
that.
That's
all you can do now.
And I laughed. And then I really laughed when I saw he was deferring the contract.
Right.
When I saw that, I was just like, you've got to be bleeping me. Like, come on.
Seems like a bad idea.
Unbelievable. And that's why they're able to do this. Shohei Ohtani's making $2 million a year. Everything's going to come to him after his career's over. So they're able to keep maneuvering. They're able to keep making these signings. And Blake Snell will be a Dodger. That's someone I had on my radar last year and this year. I like Blake Snell, and I thought he would have been a good addition to this rotation. And apparently the Dodgers thought so too, because they signed him. They signed him for a lot of money, and they're still very much in on Juan Soto, I think. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But the Bruins getting blanked 2-0. Blanked.
I love it when you say that.
They did. They were blanked.
And they got blanked.
The Canucks blanked them pretty hard.
And we got blanked as viewers.
We sure did. In the last three games, the Bruins have scored 3 goals. They said 1-0 over Utah, 2-1 over the Red Wings, and they lost 2-0 last night to the Canucks. That is the Joe Sacco era. That is what it looks like. And I'll say this. Defense looks better. The defense is looking better. They only let 13 shots on Jeremy Swayman last night. That is something, because the Canucks are no pushover. That's a good offensive team. That's a team that has some firepower, and the Bruins D was able to lock in on the blue line, and pretty much, I thought, even the goal I thought was a little iffy
from
Jake DeBrusk. Yeah, Sacco didn't like it. I know they were going nuts on the broadcast. Swayman was flipping out. Everybody had a problem with that goal. But I watched it, and I was like, well, they'll eventually get it back. They're all over this team. They're out shooting them 3-1 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be too much of an issue. Nope. Nothing. Offensively, just nothing. 0-for-4 on the power play. That last power play in the third period after the interference on Pasternak, I think that was, and we have different tiers of what was the saddest part of the game. That, to me, was the saddest part of the game. It's the third period. You're halfway through the third period. You're down 1-0. You've been peppering this guy with shots the entire game, and you get a power play, and you get dominated by the Canucks for the entirety of the 2 minutes of that power play. Not one shot on net. It wasn't as egregious as that game where they had no shots in the entire third period. That was maybe the worst thing I've ever seen, but this was pretty bad. I mean, this was, you would think that'd be the type of thing that would fire up a team and get them ready to go, come on, guys, it's 1-0. We have them right where we want them. Let's go out there and let's get a goal. And they didn't even get a shot off. That was to me the saddest part, but you disagree.
So there was a more almost granular point that was even sadder to me, and it was the end of the second period.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the offensive zone, and there was a rebound and sort of a loose puck, and Zadorov looked at the puck, which was headed toward him from the goal.
I remember this, yeah.
And looked at the Vancouver player skating toward him and the puck, and that's really all he did.
Mm-hmm.
He just looked. He watched the Vancouver player skate, take the puck, and skate right by him. He didn't go for the puck. He didn't go for the body, and he didn't start to play defense
right.
and backskate.
And he wasn't like trying to mark somebody else.
Nothing.
It was just
absolutely
back, right
it
there.
It was
yeah.
just like, it was almost like he froze in time with, huh, what should I do here? I have a couple options, and I'm not really sure. And to me, that's symbolic of the way they've played the entirety of this season. Unsure of themselves,
yep.
no fluidity to their game, no sort of aggressiveness, no confidence. And that's also a little symbolic that Zadorov is one of your big offseason signings.
Yes.
And a big guy who I think should be part of the 2024 Big Bad Bruins.
You add some toughness, right?
Yep.
Yeah, of course.
You know what the only problem is? They're the 2024 Bad Bruins.
Mm.
Like, they're not big bad, like, in a good way. They're just bad.
Yeah.
And that was symbolic to me. And I, you know, they kind of brushed, they noticed it on the broadcast. They talked about
mm-hmm.
it, but they kind of brushed it off. And I was like, how are we brushing that off? It almost felt like in football, we would call that kind of a business decision.
Yeah.
Like a guy's running and you kind of like half-ass your angle or don't really go all in to, you know, when he cuts back and you make it easy on him. That's what he did. He made it easy on Vancouver. And I was like, that is who they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're a sad little hockey team instead of a big, bad hockey team.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be one of the key additions that was supposed to elevate them
right.
for the Panthers and other teams.
And stop them from getting pushed around.
And well, and he didn't stop anything.
He didn't stop a
single thing.
It'd
be one thing if you say, well, he's not going to go for the puck. He's not so go for the body.
Right.
Okay. Or get back on D. If he had even done that, I would have said, well, he did it aggressively. He wanted to cut off a breakaway. Okay. He did nothing, literally nothing. So that is one of my candidates for the saddest part of the night. I'd also sort of a wild card candidate for saddest part of the night. Tribute videos.
Yeah. Not one, but two. Two tribute videos.
For DeBrusk and Heinen.
Jake DeBrusk, Danton Heinen, both received. Now, I don't know what kind of reception they got. I wasn't there, so I don't know how it was received by the crowd.
Yuck.
I would imagine Danton Heinen probably got a decent little pie. He was one of those ham and egger type of
sure.
players who I think, you know, Bruins fans tend to like. He'd score a goal for you here and there. Jake DeBrusk was a very polarizing player when he played here in Boston.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of people who didn't like him. There was a lot of people thought that he got Bruce Cassidy fired.
Yep.
There was a lot of people who thought he was soft. A lot of people who were happy when he ended up signing with Vancouver. Let me tell you something about Jake DeBrusk right now. Jake DeBrusk is currently on pace for 57 points this year, 25 goals and 35 assists, which actually is 58 points. I don't know why it says that.
I was just like in my head, that doesn't add
up. I'm just reading right off of ESPN. That's 58 points. David Pastrnak is on pace for 29 goals. That's four more than DeBrusk, 39 assists, which is only six more than DeBrusk, and 10 more points, 68 points. You're talking about two pretty similar players right now.
Yeah.
How's that grab you, Bruins fans? How's that grab you? The fact that Jake DeBrusk is roughly the same level of production right now as your guy David Pastrnak, as your star David Pastrnak, who I think is just every night, you know, he's a minus four on the season. It seems like he's on the ice for a ton of goals. The power play with him on or without him, it just doesn't make any difference. It seems like it's just unable to get out of the mud. And I'm not blaming all this on David Pastrnak because there's a lot of problems with this team, and he's one of the only guys I think that can score a goal, period, who can put the puck in the net. But he's not doing it. I mean, he's really not doing it very often. And that, I think, is indicative of a bigger problem here with this team that goes beyond Joe Sacco and beyond Jim Montgomery and beyond Jeremy Swayman, who, I mean, listen, he only had to make 13 saves in the game, and that's all he made, and he did let one in. But still, you can't win a game 0-0, can you? You know, like,
no.
This team can't score. They cannot figure it out. Now, it seems like Sacco's going one piece at a time trying to fix it, right?
Yeah.
Like, all right, let's get the defense settled, which they have, and the defense has been good lately. Detroit sucks, whatever, and Utah sucks, but Vancouver doesn't suck, and you did a good job against them. I thought that was a nice effort on defense there, aside from that play you just mentioned with Zadorov. I thought they did a good job on the blue line.
Sure.
The power play and just the 5-on-5 scoring is abysmal on this team right now. Abysmal.
And did you see Charlie McAvoy's
media gathering at his locker.
I don't think so.
Asked him, like, obviously the point of discussion is you guys can't score goals. And is there a belief that you're close or you're about? And he goes, well, we have to believe that.
Mm.
That's a weird answer.
Yeah.
You have to believe it. Basically, because
he's given lots of weird answers these days. Isn't
very much so. Yeah. And it's there is a sense of resignation. Like, why can't we score? Why can't we put the puck in the net? We're supposed to have the players to do it. We're shooting our shots, quote unquote. It's not like for a while there, it felt like they weren't taking enough shots.
Mm.
Now they're shooting. They're just not putting it in the back of the net.
Nope.
And that tone of his that, like, yeah, we have to believe we're close because otherwise you might as well just pack it in and call it a year.
That's what it sounds like when you're out of answers.
Right. And
when you're out of answers, you're out of options, you're out of everything. It's just, and we're so early in the season for this to be happening.
Just like the coach sounded that way.
Yeah.
But the coach left and he went to a nicer place where they gave him a 5-year contract and he
right.
still had his sweatshirt and he's all happy because once a Blue, always a Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are these guys going to do? They got long-term contracts. Once a Bruin, always a Bruin.
It's a great question. What do you do here? How do you fix this? What do you do about it? Is this just part of the process? Do you expect them to start suddenly getting their act together and winning some of these games? I'll tell you what. I think that they're better than this, but I'm not convinced of that anymore. I thought the slow start was going to be temporary. I thought it was going to be something that eventually they played their way out of because I thought this team's too talented. There's too many guys on this team who are better than the guys on the other side, and they're eventually going to start breaking out of this. And I don't know about that anymore. I really don't. This team just kind of sucks, right? I mean, they just kind of suck.
Yes.
And I don't know why they fell off so hard, but they're bordering. Like, lately, they've been kind of unwatchable. Offensively, they've been kind of unwatchable. And what's depressing to me is that you're not like the Red Sox, where you're having a bad season, but at the very least, you know you got these guys coming up through the system. We're about to hit the majors, and all of a sudden, everything's going to be better.
Nope.
Right? You don't have that. Fabian Lysell is not really doing much in Providence right now. Patras, bouncing back and forth and not really staking his claim there either. Lori stinks. Beecher's fine, but he's not going to save the team or anything like that. McAvoy was drafted in 2017. Since then, you landed Swayman in the fourth round and really not much else to speak of, and that sucks. But it doesn't just suck now. It sucks going forward because it seems like even if you fire Sweeney, whoever the new guy is, he's going to have two or three good drafts before you're back in the saddle with this team. And, we'll see what happens with their high-priced guys. But right now, a lot of them are looking like total waste of money.
Well, and that's where I think the difference is, too, is you have, like, so we criticize Devers.
Yeah.
But the Bruins are like the Red Sox if they had, like, five Devers. Guys making big money that you kind of wanted them to sign. Like,
mm-hmm.
you were kind of complicit as a fan. You like Pasta, right?
Sure.
You like McAvoy.
Yep.
You like Swayman. You liked the idea of Lindholm. You probably maybe liked the idea of Zadorov.
I like the idea and the signings of all those guys.
Yeah, the problem is it doesn't work.
No.
None of them are playing very well. They're not helping you win games, and there's no cohesion. The thing between Lindholm and Pasta and them not really fitting together, and they're all big money long-term deals. So not only would a new guy coming in trying to build a roster have to draft well over a couple year span,
yeah.
he's got to figure out big money contracts. Or do you start to do the NBA thing where you're trading contract for contract and just trying to swap out numbers to shake it up? Like, I don't know how you fix that cap situation with big, or maybe you say they got to figure it out. Maybe they are the foundation. Maybe McAvoy and Pasta and Lindholm and Swain, like, you guys figure it out. Sacco, you figure it out because they're here to stay.
Yeah. Yes, Dan.
So, Andy, I want to clarify something you just mentioned. Are you expecting more leadership changes to be coming? Like, is the coach the first of many changes to come after the season if the trend continues like this?
Yeah, and I think the general manager is, too. In that press conference when they fired Montgomery,
yeah.
he said, and if this doesn't work, there will be more changes, including organizationally.
Right.
And that means GM, president, that means executives that make the big money and the big decisions.
That means me.
Yeah. Right.
right.
He might as well have said me.
Yeah.
That, like, I'm playing for my job. I'm working for my job right here. Sacco probably has my job in his hands. Swayman has my job in his glove. And I do. I think if they just kind of scuffle along, if they play this season the way they've played the first quarter plus of this season, yes, there are going to be significant changes somewhere along the way. The first would be probably the trade deadline. But the concern there is that age-old question. If you're starting to have concerns about Sweeney, do you let him make decisions about the roster at the trade deadline?
Great question. I say right? yes because that's the one thing he's good at.
Okay.
I say yes because at the trade deadline, Sweeney turns into, the man. Like, he suddenly figures out the best guys to target, the best deals to make. He always makes these good deals at the deadline, it seems like. That if you want to fire him, I would bring him back as like a trade deadline analyst or like a consultant or something who only works at the trade deadline. Get someone else in to draft, get someone else in with the free agents, and just have him as a trade guy,
sort of
a trade guru or something.
It's a new spin on the Belichick coach GM thing. This is even more finite. You're the GM, but only the GM for the trade deadline.
Exactly.
The rest of the time, we'll handle some other duties.
You'll be the assistant GM, director of trade personnel, whatever. Sure. I don't make up a name. I don't care what it is.
Senior consultant for the trade deadline.
I'd keep him around for that, and I would keep him around for this trade deadline, too, because I don't know if the next guy's going to be as good at maneuvering the deadline as he is. I just hope the next guy's better at everything else.
And my other question is, if we get to these big picture conversations, is the one I asked you, what's the Neely Sweeney breakdown? Are they just tied at the hip? Is Neely going to fire Sweeney and stick around?
Good question. Is Jacobs going to fire them both?
Right. Yeah. And I think that is questionable debate. I think they probably should go together if they go. They seem like they're a package deal.
Yeah.
Hell, right up in the press release, you got to have Sweeney and then Neely. It's like
true.
They're together in lockstep.
Yeah, and losing to Jake DeBrusk seems like one of those moments, you know, in the season where it's like, oh God, you know, you lost to him. Jake DeBrusk came in here and beat you. That's who gave up the goal, and you got shut out by this Canucks team the 3 days after. You got that little bounce, right? You know, you got the 1-0 win over Utah, 2-1 win over Detroit, two
very
bad teams.
Little bounce.
The smallest bounce you could possibly have. That dead cat barely got off the ground.
Yep.
But now here we are, offensively about as bad as it gets here for your Boston Bruins. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. MLB Network was talking a lot about Juan Soto. We have Blake Snell going to the Dodgers. Dodgers still in on Soto, as are the, almost said the Knicks. How about the Mets and the Yankees, along with the Blue Jays? I've heard the Phillies are still kind of kicking around. MLB Network has picked their pony, and I got news for you, Red Sox fans. It ain't you. Here's Dan with what's trending, and we're right.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Back. That was MLB Network doing their Juan Soto preview here of what may happen, what may not happen in terms of where this guy is going to sign. Right now, as it stands, the Red Sox are in the mix, along with the Toronto Blue Jays, the New York Mets, the New York Yankees, the Los Angeles Dodgers. And although you haven't heard much of this lately, I heard the Phillies were still lurking in the background, that they may emerge.
I saw that. They weren't in that five-team offer list, but I've seen sort of the rumblings that they're still in it.
I worry about teams like that.
Mm.
Teams that are just on the sideline waiting for all the dust to settle, and then boom, here comes Dave Dombrowski swooping in.
Especially him.
Yeah. He's sneaky. Like
almost
that,
like F it, let's just do it kind of thing, last minute.
Let's end this.
Yeah.
Let's go in there. Let's blow everybody away. He does have that kind of element.
Absolutely.
To him, you know what I mean? He's done that before. And I do think that these are all teams that I look at and I think are much more likely to sign Juan Soto. They believe it's going to be the Mets. And I'm basing this not so much on the team. I'm not basing it so much on the farm system, the facilities, the city, any of that. I'm basing it strictly on the owners.
Yep.
Really, that's what it's about to me. How much do these owners want Juan Soto? How badly do they want him? It's really like there's not much else you can really attribute it to, because I think, yes, the Red Sox do have an advantage in their farm system. I think the Mets and the Yankees probably have the advantage as far as like city life and living goes, because they're in a real city where bars stay open past 12:30. And, you know, it is. I mean, come on. And also the train keeps running after 11:30, too, which is a nice thing there. But either way, I mean, listen. All of that to say this, Steve Cohen, you think he's going to let the Yankees outbid him and the Steinbrenner kids? Now, I think the Steinbrenner kids, they're not like the old man. they'll re-sign guys and they'll bring guys in, but they're not going overboard like George used to. They'll have a bit more, I don't want to say restraint, but I think that's kind of the way. They have more restraint when it comes to this stuff. John Henry, I feel like, is absentee. He says, oh, yeah, we're interested. Throw an offer in there and come back to me and tell me about it. I think he's got way more stuff going on in his portfolio that he just doesn't care that much about the Red Sox anymore. Steve Cohen cares about the Mets. He cares about how it looks. He cares about all of that stuff. And he has money to burn. And that's it. I mean, that's really what it's all about. He has money to burn. He's not afraid to spend it. He's not afraid to go out there and make a godfather big splashy offer. And he wants the Mets to be the team in New York. And that's really what it's all about here. He doesn't want to get outbid by the Yankees, and he definitely doesn't anticipate getting outbid by John Henry and the Red Sox. I think the Mets here probably have the inside track if we're just judging it by the owners and their ownership groups. The Mets are way up here, and I feel like everybody else is kind of clawing at them.
I agree, and part of it is his relative newness, but part of it is also just who he is, because the thing I always think of with Cohen is, I don't know if you remember this story, a fan, after like a rainout of a series, said, oh, they should put a roof on Citi Field, retroactively go back and put a roof on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most owners would just be like, ah, yeah, Steve Cohen called like an architect and asked him how much it would cost to put a roof on the place.
Pretty much, yeah.
And that's the way he thinks. Sort of like Ballmer. We talked about him with the
right.
Clippers.
Yeah.
I think some owners say, well, why would we do that? And then he's like, well, why not? I have billions, endless amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
I can do it. If I want to do it, I'm going to do it. Whether my CPA or tax guy or cap guy or this guy says it's dumb, if I want to do it, I'm going to do it. And I do think if that's all that's in play, I absolutely would say that the Mets are the top option. Now, I don't know where he looks in that direction, because I also think there's part of him. They had that year 2 years ago where they spent. It didn't
right.
work. And then they kind of started to unload a little bit and take a step backwards. Now, obviously, they took a step forwards this year in terms of success. But yeah, I would have more confidence as a Mets fan in Cohen than as a Red Sox fan in Henry. That's just, it is what it is.
You should. I mean, you absolutely should. And then there's the little man, the little matter of the
hey,
LA
little man,
Dodgers.
Whoa.
Little matter, I meant to say, of the Dodgers. And what's the name of that group that owns the Guggenheims or whatever?
Yeah.
It's the Guggenheim baseball thing or whatever, which is like Magic Johnson and Billie Jean King. And, you know, Peter Gruber's the main guy. And he's not showing any hesitancy to go out there and spend either. And you saw that last night when the Dodgers inked Blank Snell to a $180 million contract. Blake Snell, who was a Cy Young Award winner not too long ago, but has also been considered kind of a risky signing.
Yeah.
The Dodgers now have a pretty good rotation with Ohtani coming back and pitching next year, and the other guys they have up and down that rotation. Go out there, spend big money on Snell, and not only do they spend big money on Snell, but he's deferring part of his contract, just like Ohtani did, which I don't know how these Guggenheim guys are convincing everybody to do this, but it is working out for them, isn't it? They're able to get big names. They're able to defer the money. They're able to go out there and keep shopping. And I still think Soto's on the table for them. I don't think that this is going to be prohibitive towards that at all. I think Soto is still very much in the crosshairs of the LA Dodgers, and they should be a team you're scared of too.
So I told you in the email this morning, we were bouncing around, like the reaction should be, oh, the Dodgers spent $180 million on Snell. They must be out on Soto, especially after the spending spree they went on last year. But with all these deferred contracts, and I don't know if I'll be dead. I don't know when this all comes to fruition, but this is going to be an issue for them at some point, right? Like, I'm no expert. I didn't go to business school. I don't have an MBA, but this feels like this is kicking the can, they called it in the NFL for
definitely
years down the road. But
maybe they're just hoping Ohtani has another gambling thing and they don't have to pay him or something.
This feels like a fraud case waiting to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
Kinda, yeah, right?
Honestly, give it 10, 15 years' time. Somebody's not getting their money.
Yeah, it feels wrong. Or somebody's got a hell of a job to try to do down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But what do they care right now?
Not
whether
at
your
all
ownership, whether you're anybody. Like, win now. Let's win and let them worry about it down the road.
The Wick Grosbeck method.
Yeah.
And basically what it is.
I mean, I think we've seen it works.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it. The Dodgers versus the Yankees, if you spend, you're in the postseason, you're in the World Series. The Celtics, if you spend, you win a title. The Warriors proved it in recent years. Like,
yep,
some of these teams that go all in financially, now you have to make sure you get the actual talent that warrants the spending, but they've proven it's you can still buy championships. I know for a while there, people were trying to talk themselves out of it in all sports. Oh, you can't really buy championships because continuity and team and this and caps and that. No, you still kind of can buy championships.
Oh, 100% you still can. And it's good to be able to draft and develop. Like, that's still important.
Sure.
And it's a good thing to be able to do because these players who you end up signing for big money get drafted and developed by somebody, and sometimes they're good enough early on in their career when they're still going through arbitration and everything that they can contribute to a World Series. I mean, that's very true. We saw it with Mookie. We've seen it with a lot of guys.
And isn't it a sucker's acceptance to say it's either or? Like, I never understood that. Because the Dodgers signed Snell today, they're not going to draft anyone.
Oh, you can't draft, right, of course.
They're not going to have minor league teams.
I mean, if you trade a bunch of draft picks away, but that doesn't really happen in the majors that much.
No, but in baseball, they just spent money.
Yeah.
So they're going to draft players. They're going to have minor league teams. They're going to have a hitting instructor and a pitching instructor and guys in Florida or Arizona, right, that are going to try to develop players. Why is it either or? Why can't I spend money up here? And then maybe you spend a little bit more, whatever, at the minor league level compared to some other team. But it should be both. And it's almost like a GM can't do both either.
Mm.
There's no GM that's capable. Well, I mean, you might put Sweeney up there as a guy that wouldn't be capable of doing both. But couldn't a smart baseball guy be like, yeah, that guy's really good at the major league level. And this high school kid, I think he's going to be good in 3 years. Why does it have to be either or?
It's a good question.
How about do both?
It's a good question. And there's some teams that just are all about those young, the Tampa Bay Rays, and Baltimore was like this for years and years and years. And Baltimore has amassed a good amount of young talent. I mean, they have it all up and down their roster. They have all sorts of good young players. And that's a good thing to have. But ultimately, it comes down to who's willing to go that extra mile for premium talent when it hits the market to beat the Dodgers of the world, or back in the 90s and 2000s, the Yankees of the world, or whoever. I mean, really, like, and there's teams who try it and it doesn't always work. Look at the Padres.
Right.
Padres went crazy with money and it didn't really work out for them, but at least they tried. You know, at least they gave it an effort. They tried to get in the mix with that, and that's what the Red Sox did. All the way back in 2001, when John Henry and this group bought the team, they decided, you know what, we're going to compete with these guys. We're going to make sure that we're in the mix, that it's not just the Yankees getting Raul Mondesi and Giambi and Sheffield and A-Rod and all these guys. Every single year, we're going to get in there. We're going to get Manny Ramirez. We're going to get Curt Schilling. We're going to bring in these guys. We're going to get Dice K and Josh Beckett and whoever. You know, like, this is, we're going to compete with that. And they did a good job of both of those things. They did a good job of finding diamonds in the rough, drafting guys. They had a good farm system with guys coming up and contributing, and they were able to go out and make big splashy signings and trades. And now it's just, it's all in the minors. That's what it's all been about here for the last 5 years. The Chaim Bloom era was all about the minor leagues. And now here we are with Craig Breslow, who I think is much more of a Chaim Bloom than he is a Dave Dombrowski, expecting him to fix it all. And I just think that's a risky proposition.
Yeah, and I understand when I say, why can't you do both? Not every organization can do both. I was looking from a Boston perspective.
Right.
Or an L.A. or a New York. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of places where you can do both. You can sign big money players. And you said it, like, back in the day, would they trade Carl Pavano and Tony Armas Jr. for Pedro?
Right.
Like, so you had quality prospects you were able to trade away to get an elite pitcher, sign him to a big money contract. Schilling you traded for, you sign him. Like, you were able to make trades along the way. It wasn't like they just bought everything. So that's an era where, I'm going to buy Manny, but I'm going to trade prospects for Pedro. Mm-hmm. And, oh, look, I actually put something together. Oh, and I also developed a Nomar or, whoever else.
Or John Lester and Clay Buchholz. And, back when they used to actually have pitchers in their farm system.
That's my point.
Those are all homegrown guys.
You can do it all. You can spend money, you can trade, and you can develop players from within your system. That's not pick one. It's not there's three options. You have to pick a lane. Nope. You can skate all three lanes.
You can do all of them, especially you Boston Red Sox.
Yes.
You got enough money, all right? And we know the Fenway Sports Group is doing well. What?
Yesterday you were more optimistic on the Soto thing, the five teams, the last bid. I feel like you've turned a corner towards more negative again today.
Yeah, I mean,
what happened?
Because they didn't sign it. They didn't get them. That offer didn't do it.
Yeah, but we got like another round of bids.
Sure we do.
We got about a week.
We have another round of bids until Soto agrees on one, and I thought that might be, all right, well, he made his last offer. Let's see if he accepts it, and then clearly isn't, because it's clearly not enough. So
did the Blake Snell signing change things for you,
Christian?
The
Blake Snell signing did, yeah.
Did it really?
It did sour me on that a little bit, because that's another guy the Red Sox were in on. Red Sox were in on Blake Snell, and here come the Dodgers, and bam, he's a Dodger, and that's it. And that's what keeps on at. Teoscar Hernandez last year, Blake Snell this year. Anytime the Red Sox are interested in somebody, the Dodgers end up freaking signing.
Yeah, but Max Fried. And
oh, wow, cool. Max Fried.
There's
great.
Plenty of other guys. There's other fish in the sea, my friend.
Great, and we'll wait and see the Dodgers sign all them, too. 617-779-7937. Drake May has thrown 10 touchdown passes to 10 different receivers this year.
Spreading the ball around.
There is not one player on this team that has caught more than one touchdown pass from Drake May. I think it's time to fix this pass game, and I got a theory on how to do it. We'll get to that right after this. That was a fun moment. Big boy touchdown. We always enjoy those. I wanted to play that because I saw a stat that I was not aware of. I should have been, but I'm not. And that, or I wasn't, I am now. And that is that Drake May's 10 touchdown passes this year have been caught by 10 different people. One each. You want to take a get? You want to take a stab at this? You want to see how many you can get?
Sure.
All right. We know Vidarian Lowe's one.
Vidarian
so
Lowe, Kayshawn Booty.
Yep.
Jalen Polk.
Yep.
Ramondre Stevenson.
Yes.
Hunter Henry.
Hunter Henry. Yes.
Kendrick Bourne.
Bourne. Yes.
Austin Hooper.
Hooper. Yes. You got three more.
DeMario Douglas? No, 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 no. I didn't say it.
DeMario Douglas is yes.
Oh, okay.
But Mario, I think you already said him.
No, I didn't.
You didn't? Okay.
No.
All right, well, there's two left.
Antonio Gibson?
Not Antonio Gibson.
No Antonio Gibson. No Tyquan Thornton. No.
There's three that you haven't mentioned somehow. I think you repeated one, but it doesn't matter. The ones you're missing are KJ Osborne.
He literally is not on my, like, he is.
Don't even think about it.
Forgotten.
Jermichael Hasty has caught a touchdown pass.
I would have never gotten
him. And Ramondre Stevenson, I don't think you said.
No, so. I said him.
Oh, you did? Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
So I got 8 of 10.
All right, so you got 8 out of 10. Hasty and Osborne were the other two. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at that, and I was looking down the list of these 10 guys who have caught touchdown passes this year from Drake May, and it really made me even more so than I already do. It makes me so much more aware of the total lack of chemistry that you have with any of these guys. You know, like, it's not like there's one guy. And I think during camp, there was something going on there with Baker and maybe a little something going on with Jalen Polk. And you thought, okay, Drake May is there with the rookies and he's been passing with these guys. Javon Baker does not have a catch this year, right? He hasn't even caught a ball this year. Nope. And Jalen Polk is not doing anything. So I think this speaks to a lack of chemistry with any of these guys, and how can you have much chemistry with them? They're not very good. I think this offseason, I'd clean house. I mean, I honestly would. I'd sign T. Higgins. I would trade for another quality receiver like a DK Metcalf or somebody like that, and I'd have two top guys there right in the crosshairs, and that's who you start off with. That's your base, okay? And you go from there. I'd even draft another guy in the first three rounds next year. I'd go so hard at the wide receiver position because I think that that's the most urgent. I know a lot of people think the tackle's the most urgent, and I do think that they have a terrible tackle room. But at the very least, Drake May can take off and extend the play with his feet a little bit. And even if the rush is coming, he's proven, and I know he's not perfect at it yet, as we saw last Sunday, but he's proven that he can sense the rush, he can make a play, he can be evasive and make guys miss, and he can throw on the run. He can do all those things, but he has no one to throw to, and that's really what it's all about. He's good, all right? Drake May's good. He's not superhuman, and I don't want to waste any more time seeing what we have here with these wide receivers. We know what we have with them. They suck, all right? They're not very good. Bring in some guys who can play, and then you might have a fighting chance of keeping Drake May here beyond his rookie deal, because I got to be honest with you. We've noticed in his demeanor, right? I mean, he started off this plucky, happy guy, and as the season goes on, the losing's part of it, but it's also the fact that he's looking down the field, and there's no guys aren't turning their heads. He's throwing the ball up. Guys don't know where it is. Guys are dropping passes. It's just been a nightmare. And I think that, you know, when you want to keep somebody around or want them to be excited about staying here beyond their rookie deal, you have to set it up better for them than this. And this was a blown debut for Drake May in terms of what Elliott Wolf put out there for him and how the rest of the team got him ready with their coaching staff and everything else. So loading up a wide receiver, I understand. We've been conditioned after 20-plus years to not think that you need to do that, right? Because Tom Brady never, except for the 1 year when they brought in Welker and Moss, other than that, they went all this time without really loading up at wide receiver, and they won plenty of championships. The only time they didn't win is when they had Welker and Moss, and I think that kind of broke people's brains.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, you don't really need a high profile playmaker at wide receiver. No, you don't when you have Tom Brady. You're right. But when you have a 22-year-old rookie quarterback, you have to help him. And I think that means more than T. Higgins. You need to have guys ready in case Higgins goes down. And right now, you don't have anything. Really, I mean, right now, I feel like you just have nothing. And that's why he has one touchdown to each one of these guys, because none of them can make a play, more than one play. That's really where we are right now. And I think that that's the most urgent thing. That number, it startled. That stopped me in my tracks. You know, that just proves that there's really nothing here to build off of. And you want to keep Pop Douglas around next year? Fine. You want to keep Kayshawn Booty on the roster? Fine. But I want the top of that wide receiver room to be completely different next year, and I think that that's got to be priority number one.
So we'll dub this the Arcan plan. This is now battling the Andy Hart plan. And I think it is overly aggressive, reactionary, and a bit unrealistic, if we're being honest.
I'm sure it's unrealistic, but that's what I want.
Because I think everybody wants a number one receiver.
I don't think it's reactionary, though, either. I've been watching this team all season.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And it's funny. We're going to get more, I think, into Alex Van Pelt, but he was kind of backing the bus over everybody today.
Yeah, he was.
At various points in his press conference, including DeMario Douglas for the second straight week. Mm. So we now have definitively the interception 2 weeks ago, that was on DeMario Douglas. The inability to settle in zone on a pressure, that was on DeMario Douglas. This week, he flat out said it's supposed to be run at 5 steps. He got excited and ran it at 3. He gave us the details of how he screwed it up.
Yeah.
So DeMario Douglas, who was supposed to be your quasi one this year, the returning guy, he was healthy and returning, which put him ahead of basically everybody else.
It's true, yeah.
Right? And he hasn't been good. He hasn't lived up to the hype. I thought he'd be more consistently productive for Drake May or Jacoby Brissett, honestly. Now, I love the idea of T. Higgins. I'm a little concerned because I've seen rumors, rumblings, and speculations that the Chargers could be a T. Higgins suitor. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that idea. Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh in L.A. and that whole vibe pursuing Higgins. The price feels like it just went up.
I sure did. And I'm sure Higgins would rather go there.
Yeah. And that concerns me.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of T. Higgins or whatever that number one veteran is, and that might be DK Metcalf. I don't think it's realistic for you to get both, but where I agree with you, I don't hate the idea of the double dip free agency and draft. If you want to tell me you go get T. Higgins and then you go get McMillan in the first round in the top 5 or 6 or wherever your pick ends up being, and then you marry that up with Booty, Bourne, maybe Douglas, now you have a legitimate core because Tom Brady last week, a couple weeks ago, was kind of touting the Packers. Oh, they're a team where they don't have a number one receiver they have to feed, right? But that's not what the Patriots are. That's a bunch of young receivers who are all kind of fighting to be good.
Yeah.
Right? Christian Watson, pretty good. Like, they've proven something.
Dobbs, those guys. They're
pretty good. That's different. That you can sell me as a positive defensively. Maybe it makes it hard. Who do you take away? The Patriots aren't that. You don't have to take anybody away. There's nobody who does anything well consistently.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you could just let them run free, and it's a 50-50 as to whether they'd even be in the right spot or catch the ball. So I agree with the emphasis. I just think your route is probably a little overly fantasy football.
It definitely is.
Madden-esque.
This group hasn't shown that they're willing to go that way.
No.
They're just not. I mean, listen.
Elliott Wolf didn't do crap last offseason.
He didn't
do anything. You think he's going to do all of this offseason?
No, and the closest thing we've had to a splashy offseason here in the last 10 years was Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne at wide receiver.
I
know they got some tight ends.
Tight end, they went all in.
They did. They got the two best tight ends. One of them was good. One of them's been good everywhere else. And fine. But, I mean, that's it. That's all you've really seen here so far. And I think at the wide receiver position, in terms of pass catchers in general, you could even go for another tight end, I think. I mean, no offense to Austin Hooper here and Hunter Henry, but I think you can even upgrade there if you really wanted
to.
We'll see who's out on the market. It's just about Elliott Wolf and Robert Kraft to a greater extent if they're willing to go out and do what it takes. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got room for you here on the phone lines as we are on the day before Thanksgiving, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. We've got some Thanksgiving content to get to as well, but when we return, Gerard Mayo, do that a lot, says that he thinks the team has gotten better. He said that on Monday. Which position group do you think he's talking about? I can't think of one. Also, we have our Colts scouting report coming up, and Adam Schefter joins the show at 3:45. It's all coming up next.